Set your course for the Huff
Takes Podcast.
Welcome to Huff Takes. I'm Eric Geller.
I'm Grace Seegers.
And Haley Birdwilt is still out on maternity leave, but we're looking forward to having her back soon and talking about Ahsoka. In this episode, though, we're going to revisit another Disney Star Wars show with a little bit of a different perspective. Now, Hot Takes listeners will know that Grace, Haley, and I really did not like the Book of Boba Fett. That's putting it mildly if you remember some of the noises that Grace made when we were discussing this show. But in this episode, we've got a guest who's going to try to convince us that we're wrong. And she's actually our first return guest, so we're very excited to welcome back to Hot Takes Lily Hay Newman, security reporter at Wired. Lily, welcome back to the show.
I am very excited to be here against all legal advice.
and you know what? And we have been talking for a while about doing this show, but for whatever reason, we didn't get around to it. I've been dying to know in some detail your defense of Book of Boba Fett. So I think rather than too much preamble, I'm just going to say, take it away, Lily. What are the most important things that we should know about why this show is actually pretty good?
Yeah. First of all, I want to say I did a full rewatch of Book of Boba Fett, like in the past week or so to prepare for this. And we have been talking about this for a while doing this episode. And I think we even sort of teased it or foreshadowed it the last time I was on the show. And so I went into the rewatch a bit concerned that maybe my Hoth take wasn't going to hold up and that, you know, I was going to watch it and be like, oh, no, it's, you know, I'm not going to be able to defend this. But actually, I thought it held up really well on the rewatch. I think I would kind of recommend that everyone do a rewatch, actually. Very short. It's only 7 episodes. It's not a huge commitment. Because I think there's so much going on and there's so much there, and some of the sort of slowness or pacing issues that people perceived, especially in the first 4 episodes, I think you get a lot more when you're doing a rewatch and, you know, you're not experiencing everything for the first time and you can actually kind of follow things more deeply. So that's one reason that I would suggest it and that I thought it held up. But also, I just thought it was really fun, and I took notes, like, in each episode, and a lot of my notes, like, for episode 2, just to give a little excerpt, my notes are like, Mare is pretty cool, Hutt twins are cool, scary / rad Wookiee, desert train is cool, they call it a long speeder, train scene was rad, what's not to like? So, like, I'm just, like, humming along, very, very into it, so highly recommend the rewatch. But more generally, you know, I was not a big fan of Boba Fett as a character, like, historically as a kid or, you know, watching the original movies. I don't know if it's a gendered thing or what, but I just, you know, I was never that into Boba Fett. I never understood why, you know, people liked Boba Fett. I was just like, he's this minor character who's, like, evil and, you know, working against our heroes. So what's, you know, maybe I had this, like, unsophisticated and simple view. But so I think that made me... I was pretty unbiased going into Book of Boba Fett because I didn't really understand how this character could have a whole show, or why I would want to watch it. And I was sort of like, oh, okay, you know, it's the next Star Wars TV show, so I'll watch it. And then I got really into it and I was really liking it. And then I started seeing all this criticism that everyone else hated it. And, you know, really, like, a lot of trash talks in a lot of group chats. And then the Hoth Takes episodes were very critical. And I was so confused about, you know, what was I seeing in this that everyone else wasn't, or why was I misunderstanding this? But I came to feel more and more strongly that it was actually a really good show and a very interesting show. And I know that the thing that has stood out to Eric all this time and, you know, infuriated him and, you know, just made him so enraged that he wanted to do this episode so I could completely embarrass myself and, you know, destroy my reputation publicly, is that I've talked about how Book of Boba Fett kind of reminds me of Star Trek Deep Space Nine in some ways. And, you know, not to turn a Star Wars show into a Star Trek show, but I think the similarities that jumped out at me, even though, you know, they're very different, like Deep Space Nine is like a massive show, many seasons. This is, you know, very short, like I said, seven episodes of TV. But I think they, you know, Deep Space Nine was not universally liked at the time. It wasn't really appreciated. People didn't really get what was going on with it overall. But ultimately, like in hindsight, it's really viewed as a show that was part of expanding how TV narratives and arcs are done and moving away from like Monster of the Week, you know, individual episodes to like season-long arcs, bigger arcs, and linking or, you know, expanding storytelling over the whole run of a show. And, you know, there are other like non-sci-fi shows from this era that are like also credited with this. But I think Book of Boba Fett is similarly playing with serialized TV as a form, playing with crossover characters. Some of this is also happening, you know, in recent years in the Marvel universe. But I think in, you know, for the Star Wars universe and just for, you know, 18 months ago or 2 years ago when this came out, Book of Boba Fett really has something to contribute in terms of it's sort of a season of The Mandalorian, but it's sort of its own show, and it's spotlighting this one character who maybe there wouldn't have been a great argument for this character to just have their own show, but this is kind of a way to do it that makes sense and ends up linking this character up with a larger narrative, but then also kind of embedding some interesting experimental stuff from this other show. So, you know, we'll get into this, like the Grogu Jedi training and Luke stuff, into kind of like a side show. So if that gamble doesn't pay off, it's not really in the main title. I just think there's a lot of interesting, innovative stuff happening. And I give the show a lot of credit for that.
Well, Lily, I just have to say, I disagree with you on pretty much every single count, but I do respect the heck out of you for the how you are staying true to your convictions. And it is, you know, I really appreciate it when someone takes an unpopular position and it sticks with it and genuinely believes it and is like, yeah, the rest of the world is wrong. And it sounds like I'm teasing you, and I am teasing you a little bit, but genuinely, I do really appreciate your convictions in this. My first thought, as you were comparing it to Deep Space Nine, is that the difference between the Book of Boba Fett and Deep Space Nine is that Deep Space Nine is good. but I do think that's a really interesting take, and I don't want to divert this Star Wars podcast into a Star Trek podcast, but I am intrigued by what you were saying about how it played, Book of Boba Fett played with a different form of storytelling. So for me as a viewer, I was really distracted by these flashbacks and wondering what their purpose was, and then we were in the present day, and then we were in a completely different TV show. And I just found it to be very jarring and for the pacing to be off. So how do you defend the decision in pacing there, and to have these episode long flashbacks and then to completely divert the story away? And why do you think that it was ended up being a successful holistic season when you look at it from the perspective of a 7-episode show?
Yeah. Well, first of all, I agree. We can't go too deep into the DS9 stuff, but I would just say, I mean, I have a, you know, really true and earnest love of DS9, so I'm really not, I would hate for people to sort of get the wrong impression that I'm like, that this is a, what's it called, an underhanded compliment or something to DS9, because I truly, like, love it and recognize it in all its brilliance. But the one thing I would say, you know, in response to what you said, is that the show is not, like, consistently good every second, every episode, you know, which is true of all Star Trek. Like, we got some winners and some losers in there. And I feel that, again, it's just a very different scale. So you can't really, like, it's not a really apt comparison one-to-one, because it's such a different just vision and ambition is what I'm trying to say. You know, DS9 is just much more ambitious in scale. But I think similarly, like, Book of Boba Fett is not like an all-time slam dunk, everything is perfect show. You know, it has good and bad, and I just think in totality it is good, similar to how, you know, DS9, the amazing things about it, like, far exceeds its stumbles. So that's just what I would say about that. In terms of the pacing stuff, yeah, again, I highly recommend a rewatch, because I was bored in the first watch as well at times, where I was like, okay, it's like this sepia tone flashback, or then, you know, then it they like move back and forth, and there's these, it's these like back to tank dreams, and young Boba Fett, you know, seeing Jango Fett fly away, and, you know, to his death, and I don't know, you know, I get what you're saying, but when I rewatched it, it really started to cohere a lot more for me that this is the sort of powers that be in Star Trek, I've confused myself. The powers that be in Star Wars lore, you know, or the people who control Star Wars, saying, okay, we're gonna take this time to focus on character development of Boba Fett, exploring Boba Fett's psyche, exploring who he is, and this is like gonna be it, you know, like there's not gonna be a ton more where there's any specific focus on Boba Fett. So we're not gonna skimp, we're not gonna, you know, have it be very hectic and thrown together. Like, we're gonna do 4 really like special pure episodes just about him and what's going on Tatooine, and, you know, what's going on with the Tuskens and land rights and the syndicate and the Hutts and all this sort of local politics. And we're just gonna go deep on this for a little while so that everyone has this feeling of satisfaction and world building, because then we're gonna be done. And I think you all, like, really loved that in Andor. And I did, too. Like, just really getting to take some time to not be with Jedi and not be, you know, with some of the traditional flashy Star Wars characters and lineages, and instead just focus in on more quotidian galaxy building, like what is it like to live in this galaxy, and what are the sort of daily logistics, and I think for me this show is similarly delivering that. And I just thought there were a lot of really sort of special moments. You know, the sand people, like, obviously, you know, there's, like, at the iconic moment in A New Hope where Luke is attacked by sand people and it forever, like, alters the course of everything. And, you know, you see that Tusken, like, raise his... Oh, crap. I don't know what the
gaffy stick is
called. Thank you. The gaffy stick over his head, you know, multiple times. And then you find out that that was actually like two frames that they rocked back and forth in the edit. And like, whatever, just all this lore of like, you know, the sand people. So to just really get some special time with them and then and learn like how their society works and then... Boba Fett goes on this like psychedelic lizard brain controlling spirit quest, which, you know, kind of parallels like the Jedi trials in a sense, or, you know, going to Ilum to find your kyber crystal. Like, I was so in it, you know, I was really down. And it was wild to me because I don't even like Boba Fett, you know, like I was never even into this character. And the other thing I would say is I think Tamara Morrison is a really good actor. Like, and the writing was good enough, you know, it was all kind of working. There are some awkward moments. It's, you know, it's not perfect, but overall, I felt like he was just like very earnest and taking it really seriously and loves the character. And so yeah, that's why I think it was working for me. There were more parts of your question, but I'll stop there for now.
Well, let me jump in because I'm glad that you brought up the DS9 comparison, if only so that I can shoot it down, which is DS9 was great because, ironically, the first word in the title, it was deep. It explored issues in a thorough way, in a thought-provoking way, and of course it was innovative for Star Trek. This show doesn't have the time to be deep because it wastes half of each episode on a flashback that doesn't pay off, and then it wastes one entire episode on characters from another show who have a resolution to their story that then robs viewers of the other show of the payoff there, which I know Grace has a lot of thoughts about as well. So it doesn't have the time to actually explore issues. I would love it if they made a show that was kind of what you were saying, Lily, this exploration of Boba Fett's psyche, getting to understand why he was the way he was. But I don't think we saw that. Instead, I think we saw them try to rebrand him as a hero, as the protector of a town, when, first of all, there was no indication that he would want to be that person. They did not do a good job of justifying him wanting to take on that role. And second of all, once we actually spent any degree of time with him, we realized that there was a reason that he had such a small presence in the original trilogy. It's because he's a two-dimensional character. Aside from the sort of trauma of losing his father, which there's no sort of unique flavor to that that is like quintessential Boba Fett trauma, he doesn't have anything interesting in his past that explains why we would want to focus an entire show on him. And I don't think we get anything in this show that builds on that. So he's changed into this person who wants to be a hero, even though he spent his entire life living in the gray, killing whoever he has to for money, not taking sides. And then when they want to try to explain, well, why is he this way, they go to these flashbacks that don't really give us any explanation of how he became this way. The time that he spends with the Tuskens, I don't think it does a credible job of explaining his transformation into an attempted do-gooder. And the thing is that everybody wants Boba Fett to be Boba Fett. And so when he's this other guy, and he's feckless, and he's feeble, and he's helpless, and he doesn't have what it takes to be a crime lord, people go, well, wait a minute. What was the point of doing a Boba Fett show if he's not going to be Boba Fett? And we talked recently about the idea of trying to evolve characters while staying true to what people love about them. And of course, sometimes you have to take characters in a new direction. But I don't think this was earned. I don't think this new direction was earned. The only other thing I would say is, I don't I didn't do a rewatch, to be clear. But I don't know. I rewatched the episodes when they came out, in preparation for our Hoth take shows. And when I rewatched them, I didn't feel like the pacing moved any more briskly than the first time I watched it, when I was watching it for the first time and I was tapping my finger saying, okay, when do we get to the real story? That didn't go away when I rewatched it. I was still, if anything, I was more frustrated because I knew eventually we're going to get to something else in this episode, but first I've got to sit through this stuff. So I think the pacing is one of the biggest problems, and I don't know that a rewatch really does anything about that, but I want to maybe turn to Grace and to jump in a little bit on reaction to some of the stuff that Lily has said. But the last thing I'll say is, I don't think that some of the big moments with Boba Fett, and I know Grace feels the same way, were earned, right? The fight between Boba and Cad, we didn't have any reason to care about that. Like, you brought up the quest and the comparison to, like, Jedi getting their crystals on Ilum. By the time we saw, you know, the Ahsoka take the Padawans to Ilum to get their crystals, we cared a lot about Ahsoka. We wanted to watch what she was doing. This would be like if they had Ahsoka go on her journey to Ilum in, like, episode 3 of Clone Wars, where we really did not have any investment in her. And so whatever emotional journey she's going through, we're sitting there going, okay, cool, but, like, I'm not personally invested in this. And I'm sure that fight with Cad Bane was very important to Boba Fett, but the show did not make me feel like it was very important. And I think, again, to go back to my first point, that's because they didn't use their time well.
So I will just say here, a little bit in Lily's defense, that I think, Eric, you can be a bit overzealous in dismissing what you see as the excess fat in an episode, which I appreciate that you want stories to get where they are going. But I think sometimes you overcorrect a bit too much in the let's see where things going rather than let's take some time.
It was seven episodes. This is, I think Obi-Wan was 6, but this is the second shortest show they've done. this is one of the times when I think I'm most justified in saying let's pick up the pace, because 7 episodes. And by the way, it was really 6 episodes because one of them was Mandalorian season 2.5.
Well, I appreciate your fervor there, but I'm still going to stand by what I'm saying. Although I actually do agree with you on this one, but generally speaking, I think that sometimes you are allowed to take a little bit of time to develop a story and a character. My problem, so I really liked the Tuskens and the development of their culture more, and how American Sign Language was incorporated into their culture and their language. And then what annoyed the heck out of me just on that subject alone is that all of the Tuskens that Boba Fett bonds with get unceremoniously killed off screen, and this rich culture that we just learned about just becomes motivation for this guy's pain and trauma. And I thought that was really uncool. And so even if I agreed with you that this was a great way to spend time in 7 episodes, and I'm not sure that I am fully convinced by that argument, although I'm more convinced than Eric, even if I agreed with you there, then this culture gets totally thrown by the wayside as soon as the narrative has no further need of them. So given how much you said that you liked that, Lily, how did you react when the Tuskens were just killed off?
Yeah, I think that's a great point. Okay, a few layers here, and I hope I'm not degrading our audio quality, but I'm trying to quietly type notes while you all talk because there's so much here. But okay, first of all, so to Eric's point of, like, we don't really find out, like, he is a two-dimensional character, and we don't really, like, why is he this way, and why he's supposed to be a bad guy, but then now he's, like, kind of had one of these Star Wars personal code of ethics type of people, and how did that happen? Yeah, I mean, I think they're grappling, and you all have discussed this on you know, a recent past episode, but many past episode like episodes. They're grappling with like the retcon of the fact that there are, you know, were all these movies where they were not intending to make this a bigger character, so there isn't like the right stuff built in to do that. And even when you start to get a little more in the prequels, of like, you know, Jango Fett and the clones and whatever, it's still not really, and like young Boba Fett, it's still not really enough, like you're saying, Eric. So I think with a sort of problematic situation or an imperfect, you know, character arc, they chose this moment of time, this moment in time, precisely because they could say, okay, he's going to have had this, you know, life-altering rebirth experience, that where who he is as a person like changed, you know, and that's how we're going to deal with the fact that for a lot of his life he was this really, you know, kind of flat, bad character. You used a good word before that I'm now forgetting, but to describe him. But you know, and so I think that was sort of what they were doing there. You know, how well that works, you know, I get what you're saying. I get that there are limitations, but I think that's why they chose these two points in time, like, quote unquote, now, aka the present of Mandalorian, and like doing flashbacks to the past, which is the near past, meaning, at, you know, in the Sarlacc and after the Sarlacc. So after Return of the Jedi. Then I had noticed in the rewatch, I got a little concerned because, you know, there's the whole plot where like one of the ways he's already been kind of accepted into the Tusken, tribe, but one of the ways that he, his like ultimate proof to them of his devotion or something is that he, you know, helps them defeat the desert train. I forget, I had in my notes what they call it, but you know, and it teaches them how to ride speeders and like does all this, and there's all these montages and whatever, and then they fight together as brothers and, you know, the whole thing. So I got a little concerned because I was like, oh man, it's in such a like white savior complex type of area, even though, like, you know, I want to fully acknowledge that Temuera Morrison has, you know, Maori heritage and like it is not a white actor, but it was kind of feeling that way of like, okay, this person comes in from the outside and you know, shows the less technically sophisticated people or something how to fight the big bad or whatever. But then, yeah, what you are saying is true, Grace, that then at least, you know, this group of Tuskens gets wiped out, and you know, there's this, so, but I don't think what you're saying is wrong. It's just like there's sort of two levels there. He fails, you know, in a huge way to be this savior that I was almost concerned about in the other direction. Like, oh, it's too easy. You know, he just came in and helped them fix all their like indigenous land rights problems. But then, like you're saying, yes, we've, you know, become so invested in this culture and, you know, really seen and recognized its beauty, and then it's wiped out. And I don't want to defend that. Like, that, you know, I think it is maybe a problematic narrative choice. But, you know, we could see it as true in the sense of being like parallel to a lot of history in our own world and in our own galaxy, and like that the point of showing it and depicting it is to show how brutal and unacceptable the behavior in this planet is, you know. But yeah, on the other hand, I think it's not wrong Grace, what you're saying, to just view it as like that was messed up and that shouldn't have been the takeaway if we were going to spend all this time with this this group and you know, learning about their culture. So yeah, I don't know. But those are, I think, I'm looking at my notes. I think those are all my thoughts about what you two just said. Oh, I had one more. Totally separate, which is, Eric, when you talked about, like, I'm not going to give you full credit on while I rewatch to do the Hot Takes episodes, because this is, we can talk about this now or we can, you know, talk about it in a minute. But the other thing that I think recontextualizes Book of Boba Fett is just watching it once you've seen a lot more current Star Wars TV. Like, at the time that you would have even done those rewatches, like, a lot of other shows hadn't come out yet, right? So one thing that has kind of, that I think has actually been favorable to Book of Boba Fett is that now we've had Obi-Wan, we've had even shows that one might say is, like, wildly more successful, like Andor, but, you know, Ahsoka currently, season 3 of Mandalorian, maybe even other stuff I'm forgetting. There's just been a lot more Star Wars TV. And so we have a much bigger sample of what gets done well and what gets done poorly and mistakes that frustrated us and, you know, things we wish had been different and, you know, highs and lows. And I think actually doing a Book of Boba Fett rewatch now with all of that context, it fares pretty well.
I'm going to actually take the position that if you have to rewatch it later once other stuff has come out in order to see it better by comparison, that's not a well-made show. They're making the show at a point in time. They're making decisions at that point in time. They don't know what's going to come, or they know to some degree, but they don't know exactly how later stuff is going to shake out. They make the decisions that they make at that moment in time. And I think those are the decisions that we need to evaluate. Is, you were making a show in, you know, whatever, 2021. Did you make a good show? Not like in retrospect, does it, you know, look better than Obi-Wan, for example, or, you know, does this decision make more sense once you know that, you know, Din and Grogu are going to have this journey in the next season of Mandalorian? I think you have to evaluate it as a piece of content on its own terms for the decisions that were made for that show. That's not to say that it's wrong to see certain things differently in light of what has happened, but if we're just evaluating it as a show, I think it needs to stand on its own.
Yeah, I hear that. But, like, I did like it the first time around. So more I'm just saying that I think for those who didn't, they might see more of what I'm saying on the rewatch. And then additionally, I would say that rewatching is pretty core to Star Wars. Like, how many times have we all watched, you know, the original trilogy?
But the original trilogy holds up. Like, I don't know a lot of people who go back and say, you know, once you watch A New Hope after seeing the rest of the original trilogy and the sequel trilogy, it actually works better for you.
Actually, what I would make this argument about, and you can tell me if we don't have time to get into this, but rewatching Attack of the Clones, wait, that's what it's called, right? Attack of the Clones.
Yes.
Once you watch Clone Wars, does wonders for Attack of the Clones.
Sure, I would still say that that is more of a statement about how good Clone Wars is than how high quality Attack of the Clones is. Like, as a product of script writing and acting and directing, it was what it was in 2002. We can enjoy parts of it more now.
Well,
but
that's
I don't...
all I'm saying. That's all I'm saying. Like, yeah, I mean, I would not come on this show and do Attack of the Clones was a good movie.
Although we did that episode
early on.
Oh, you did?
That was actually like our second episode. It's because I love Attack of the Clones, so you should really listen to it.
Okay, well, I'm sorry. That's my bad. But I will listen to that episode because I was impressed once I watched Clone Wars, rewatching Attack of the Clones. I don't think it's a good movie, so I will listen to that episode to be convinced. But I was way more like sympathetic and sort of into it and enjoyed watching it more versus like wanting to die after watching Clone Wars.
So I guess what's interesting for me here is that I love Attack of the Clones, but I don't think it's a good movie. And I think it's better than people give it credit for, but I don't think it's very objectively good. So there's a difference between loving something and thinking it's good. And what I really find interesting about your Book of Boba Fett arguments is that you really enjoy it and you actually think it's good. It's not like I really enjoy it, but I acknowledge that it's bad. And I'm not saying that you should think Book of Boba Fett is bad. I think that you've made some really interesting arguments, and I can almost find myself swayed by some of them. But the one argument that I hear you talk about it, and I just think, nope, you're flat out freaking wrong, is the idea that it was good to have the interlude with Mando and Grogu and CGI Luke. I just don't see how you can think it's a good idea to put Mando and Grogu and CGI Luke and Ahsoka and a totally different TV show in the middle of a 7-episode show, resolving a plot line for another show. Like, just how does that make sense? Explain it to me.
Eric, do you want to pile on or should I go?
No, just pretend that I said a bunch of other stuff about how stupid that decision was.
Yeah, I can feel your wrath through the magic of the internet. Okay, so I don't think it like totally works. I don't love that part. First of all, just as an aside, I want to say that the single biggest screw up of Book of Boba Fett and like the Din episodes is just that they take like 20 minutes or 25 minutes for him to go get a new ship with what's her name?
Yeah, Pelly Motto, and then yes. He decides to race through the Tatooine pod race course for some reason.
Yes, Pelly Motto. Like, love her, very fun, the whole shtick is great, but like that, I 1,000,000% agree, like if we want to talk about waste of time and just like weird use of time, that was super bizarre, like that. And so that's in the fifth episode. And it's basically like the first half of that episode is Din, he's using the Darksaber, he gets that like leg injury, he goes and meets up with, oh, now I'm just blanking on everyone. Who's
the Armorer?
The Armorer, thank you, another amazing character. He goes and finds the Armorer, they're doing all the like Mandalorian backstory stuff for people who haven't watched Clone Wars. That was fine with me. Then he gets challenged by that other like early member of the clan for the Darksaber. Okay, all that, you know. But then that second half of the episode, just all about the ship, is absurd. Completely absurd. Such a waste of time. And then Fennec shows up and it's like, okay, we're tying it together. So yes, that episode, a lot of time was wasted. Big problem. You know, I think there's two things. I have a whole thought about the idea, and you know, Eric, you're saying we can't zoom out and like see the future of what comes next. We have to evaluate the show on its merits at the time. And I get that argument, but I do think that if we are to look ahead to season 3 of Mando, you know, we're going to have this zooming out that happens where actually it's really important for Grogu to be a Mandalorian, and who is the Mandalorian is potentially going to evolve. It may not always be Din Djarin. And, you know, all of this is going to change. So in one sense, it speaks to why this may have been kind of slotted into this other side quest, if we want to call it that, or side plot, because as sort of a, again, like a way of playing with form and a way of exploring like an alternate resolution, because it was built up as this huge thing. And that scene is amazing where, you know, Din and Grogu say goodbye to each other. I personally love that and think it's just like an all-time great Star Wars scene to me. But then the fact is, like, they didn't want Grogu to be a Jedi. And also you just have all these issues of how to deal with Grogu's, the time scale of Grogu's aging. And, like, it's very difficult to work with narratively. So I think they, like, took a shot on just sort of stashing this whole pivot into this other show that's a kind of part of a bigger show, but it's kind of a separate series. And I don't really defend it, like the, you know, what you were saying, Grace. This is something that I don't think is good. I just appreciate the effort, or I, you know, appreciate the innovation that they were trying to do. But I don't think it totally works. It's just like, it would be tough to do that pivot another way if that's what they ultimately realized they were going for. But then, so that's one thing. But then the one other thing I want to say is that I do think having Din and Boba Fett in the same show, you know, spending a bunch of time with Boba Fett and then spending enough time with Din to be like, okay, I'm in my Mandalorian mode. Mandalorian is so great. I love, you know, totally into that show. Love Din. What an amazing character. I think they kind of needed to do that because a bit of an issue that they have with turning Boba Fett into this big character and giving him so much time is that he's, like, in certain ways, very, very similar to Din. They're both, like, mercenaries. They're both bounty hunters. They both wear Mandalorian armor. They both have one of these Star Wars, like, personal moral compass and code of ethics. So I think it was risky, but I really think it paid off to take a bunch of time with each of them and then put them together. And this had already started in season 2 of Mandalorian, where Boba Fett was in Mando's show. You know, now it's like Din is in Boba Fett's show. And comparing and contrasting them and having them fight next to each other and having their plots, like, fully converge for this moment in time, to me, again, was very risky because it could have just really weakened both their characters. But I feel that it really paid off, and that comparison highlighted the differences and what's special about each of them, and kind of further developed their characters and showed the ways in which they are different. And that's really valuable, and a valuable thing for Din to then take with him as we continue to follow him. And, you know, Boba Fett we're not really going to see anymore.
So I will say I do agree that having Din show up is good, and seeing them as different Mandalorians is good, and that Din gets something from, you know, working alongside Boba and seeing how he is as a leader and all that stuff. I think the problem is that they could have done that without spending so much time servicing Din's story, essentially continuing the Mandalorian. If they had just brought him in as a regular cameo when Boba needs help, with maybe one short scene of here's where he is now when he gets the call from Boba Fett, I think a significant portion of the criticism of this show would not exist. At least, you know, this part of it, the whole Mandalorian season 2.5 thing. The problem is that by the time Din shows up to help Boba, you've been slogging through watching this other show wedge itself into the show you were watching. And so it's both frustrating to be taken away from the show you were watching, even if you weren't particularly impressed with it. And it's inevitable, you know, as you're watching it, oh, Well, this is happening because he's going to end up roped into Boba Fett's story and he's going to go help him. So it takes away some of the dramatic effect of having him show up to help Boba Fett, because from the moment you see that first scene with Din and you realize, oh, we're taking a little interlude, you realize, oh, well, I know where this is going. He's going to be brought back into the A-plot. So you're left to stew with that realization for way too long. So when it actually happens, there's no, oh man, my favorite character from that other show is here to help out, which is actually something that I think, for all the criticism of like gratuitous cameos, I think an interconnected TV universe can get a lot of juice out of that idea of, hey, it's your favorite person from the other thing who showed up to do the thing here, but you have to do it right. And I don't think it was done well here.
Yeah. See, the thought that I had was kind of the opposite of what you had, Eric, where, yeah, I do think that Din and Boba have a really fun relationship and that they play well off of each other. But this just further convinces me that we didn't need a Book of Boba Fett show at all. Like, he could have just kept showing up in Mandalorian and being badass and being a fun character and not needing, like, he didn't need to have that development of character when he's just a fun occasional drop in Mando side character. But because they attempted to do this whole show on him, then you can't help but compare him to Mando, to Din, and compare the show to The Mandalorian. So I think either way, I would have been happier. The Eric way of Din shows up for a cameo, or Book of Boba Fett the show just doesn't exist at all and Boba remains a fun side character in Mandalorian.
I agree with that, for the record. I don't think Boba Fett benefited from having this show.
Yeah, I guess I just feel like, well, I think, you know, again, I never liked Boba Fett before and never felt invested in his character, and now I am. So at least with me, he really benefited, you know, from having this show. And I think, I feel that there's something in there that, like, because, and it's not just you all, like, you know, going on forums and Reddit and whatever, you can see that, you know, vast majority of people agree with you. But I just feel like the two criticisms are kind of at odds. Like, either it was too much Boba Fett and it took too much time with Boba Fett, or it was too much of the Mandalorian stuff. But to me, it satisfies both, and I thought the balance, it hit a good balance. One thing this show didn't do that other Star Wars TV does is they could have hybridized the plots and sort of moved back and forth the whole time between Boba Fett and Din, and, you know, kind of wove it together the way it's done in other shows, where, you know, you have like the main plot going on with Andor, and then you sometimes go to see what's new with the sniveling guy who gets fired from the Empire, the investigator. What's his name?
Cyril.
Yeah, Cyril Karn. With the amazing neurotic mother. You know, they could have done it more that way, and I think that's what everyone is more used to, and that's more of a standard Star Wars, like, storytelling technique, and just a more standard narrative technique in general, and maybe that would have been helpful to people, versus, like, huge chunk on Boba Fett, then, like, small chunk on Mando, and then the seventh episode is the hybrid episode. That might have worked better, but I just found this interesting, and it wasn't a total flop for me. Like, I thought it was cool to attempt to do the storytelling in a different way. And like I said, I thought there was a purpose to it, because I felt like Boba Fett really wasn't going to sustain a whole show by himself. And I remember thinking, man, seven episodes of just this, how are they going to do that? And then it turned out that's not what they were going to do, because there was going to be, you know, this whole other thing that injected life into it and like a larger context. And so, you know, for me, that worked.
As we start to wrap up here, Lily, you've made some really interesting and you know, thought-provoking points about why we should rethink some of our criticisms of the show. I was wondering if you wanted to take the opportunity to defend the Maud Parlor, because I personally know that both Grace and myself were very disappointed by the existence of the Maud Parlor, the convenience of the Maud Parlor, the silliness of it, even in a universe that has a lot of success with silliness from time to time. Would you like to discuss why the Maud Parlor is actually a work of Shakespearean brilliance?
Yeah, super interesting. I tried to keep this in mind during my rewatch because I remembered that you all like just could not stand the Maud Parlor and the like. I think they in Book of Boba Fett they call like the ragtag group of body modification enthusiasts mods. But can you remind me a little more like what your issue is? Because as I said, I have episode notes and I kept taking notes that were like, yeah, I'm still not really seeing what the issue is, like trying to figure out what their problem was with this.
Grace, do you want to take this one?
So I think our main issue with the Maud Parlor is that it's the idea that it can bring pretty much anyone back to life. And to be clear, Star Wars has previously brought back people to life who should not have been brought back to life. Most famously / infamously, Darth Maul, who was sliced in half and yet somehow was able to be resurrected. So with the acknowledgement that this is already kind of a silly universe, it just felt as if the stakes are so low. There is never going to be any real death or any real hurt that is lasting if you can just go up to the Maud Parlor and get it refabbed and all of a sudden you're Fennec with a whole new stomach and metal organs and stuff like that. So if I recall correctly, that was the big mm-hmm. problem with the Maud Parlor. Also, we thought the gang of shiny bike mods was silly.
Yeah, okay. Yeah, I mean, I think like that's fine. But I do think your own sighting of Darth Maul is just like there's already precedent that sometimes for some reason people can be sawed in half and then just get Darth Maul has like spider mechanized spider
he does.
Legs
yeah
right?
Initially
yeah, and then gets like more of a body for when he fights Obi-Wan to the death, right?
Yes, because the witches of Dathomir give him a body.
Witches. that's
we love
that's
the witches
chill. We love the witches, but anyway, yeah, I think I don't like disagree. I just feel like because there's already this is like established in the universe, you can't really blame Book of Boba Fett for deploying it. And the real reason they were doing it wasn't even, it's a writing issue. Like, first of all, they could have just had Fennec not have such a catastrophic injury and not require like a full mechanized torso. That they could have just done that.
But that would require them to have planned in advance for the existence of this show.
But, well, oh, I see, because what's the issue? It's already established that she has that?
No, they just didn't know they were going to make this show when they had, I guess it was Din,
fatally shoot her. And then he comes and finds her.
No, Din doesn't shoot her, does he?
Well, who shoots her?
Isn't it the other bounty hunter?
Oh, right, that's right. He betrays her. That's right.
Bobby Cannavale's kid. Yeah.
Okay, I see what you're saying. Yeah, but still, they could have, like... I guess it's at the wrong point in time. But anyway, they could have come up with another solution to that. Or when they, this is another writing thing, when he brings her to the Maud Parlor, the line could have been, the line is something, you know, he's like, she's dying. And the line is like, oh, well, why didn't you mention that before or something? Because it's like, supposed to be appointment only, but if you're dying, then you get to go to the front of the line. The line could have been more like, she needs like a, you know, something. And the person's like, well, it's not as bad as it looks, like we can fix this or something, you know, like, I think it was a bit of a writing issue. But yeah, I just don't blame the show too much, because there is a precedent for this type of thing before. And mainly it's just that the mods, the gang of pals is going to be one of his crucial allies in the rest of the show. And, you know, they're trying to demonstrate his like open-mindedness, and, you know, body modification stuff is a real like hacker ethos type thing. And I think they're just trying to show that Boba Fett is like progressive minded and open to all sorts. You know?
I mean, I don't know that there's any reason to think that he would have a bigotry towards people who have cybernetic. Like, I see what you're saying, but I don't think that was some sort of, this is our way of showing that he doesn't hate people who have body modification. Like, did we think he would? Like, was that a point they had
Boba
to make?
Boba Fett's a bigot.
That's I just it's not like I don't it didn't it just didn't bother me that much, therefore I was just like, whatever, yeah, that was dumb.
The only thing I'll say about Darth Maul is at least that's like a cool like lore, like force spiritual explanation for how he survived. This was just like, okay, well, this person, we killed her in a show, or at least we certainly made it look like we were killing her, and then we decided actually we'd like her to be the sidekick for the character in the other show, so we need to come up with a way to almost immediately undo her apparent death. There was no gap in time to give us like that sense of, okay, we think that this character has suffered one fate, but really we're going to go back and say that they suffered a different fate. Like, at least with Darth Maul, it took a while. There was an interesting explanation through the Force, and then the Night Sisters got involved. This is just like, oh, there's actually a shop where you can kind of bring anybody back from the dead, and we're going to do it almost right after we show you that Bobby Cannavale's, you know, son killing her, or presumably killing her, because I guess you technically don't know for sure. My point is, it felt too quick, it felt too easy, and it didn't have some kind of connection to the broader mythos of Star Wars to justify it. Even then, I think Darth Maul is on shaky ground, but I would say he's on firmer ground than Fennec Shand. I think, you know, if the scale is sort of like, you know, if Palpatine is on, you know, the very far end of the scale, I think Fennec Shand is closer to him than Maul is. I think Maul is closer to the other side of the scale. Palpatine, another great example of someone who, even though it had something to do with the Force, they didn't really justify it. It felt too cheap. It felt like, well, we need a villain, so we'll have him come in. This felt like, well, we need a sidekick, so we'll have her come in. By the way, I think it's notable that up until like 5 minutes ago, we hadn't even mentioned Fennec Shand. I would be curious to know, Lily, what you think of her as a character on the show.
Oh, yeah, I was going to say, like, for me, it was okay because she's such a badass. I feel like it's worth it. But also, you reminded me during your mini rant that, like, Darth Vader is another example of how you can save someone with body modification.
He was alive on the lava of Mustafar. He just wasn't in good shape.
She's alive, too. And she's
But we didn't see it. We thought she was dead.
Yeah, in that other episode. But then when he picks her up and brings her, he's like, she's dying, like she has, you know, is badly wounded. And like, I mean, I get, you know, there's probably like Sith magic that was, or whatever, that was involved in, you know, saving Anakin, but like, I mean, his body is pretty mangled, guys.
The Emperor took him to a specialized surgical facility at the capital of the galaxy, as opposed to some random shop on Tatooine, which is supposed to be a planet far from any sort of advanced technology or civilization.
Yeah, but I think they're trying to show that, you know, this group is cool and they are like very skilled. I don't know, it just didn't bother me that much. I don't think you all are wrong. Like, I take these criticisms. It's just like, I was watching, I was trying to find like my anger, my righteous anger, because, you know, on your behalf, or like in agreement with you. And I was just kind of like, whatever, this seems fine.
You know what? At least we can say
of our issues with the Book of Boba Fett and of Fennec's return, and I agree, Fennec is a cool character. At least it's better than somehow Palpatine has returned.
Yeah.
Well, that's a free square on the bingo card. You can pretty much always say that.
I know we want to wrap up, but can I mention two other things that I have in all caps in my notes?
Go for it.
Okay. One of them is that the Book of Boba Fett theme song is awesome. I love it. And it's really fun when it comes in, you know, with the like hays and hoes. And I don't know, it's just like very dramatic and exciting and fun. And it also works well when they blend it with the Mandalorian music. And it was cool at the end of episode 4 when it does the Mando like flute tune to like indicate that his character is going to come back. I thought the music was great, and some of the other TV shows since, like the theme songs are fine or whatever, but they're not as rad as the Book of Boba Fett one, so I wanted to give credit for that. And then my big thing, I'm pretty sure this was the name of one of your episodes of everything. This is probably the thing that is closest to my heart that I just want to make sure I say. Like, the criticisms about Cad Bane's hat being too small. Does one of you want to, like, say anything about that before I express?
It's too small.
It's too small is the thing.
The thing is, Lily, it's too small.
It was one size. It should have been a bigger size.
Yes. You look at it and you're like, that's too small.
You're like, that should be big, but it's small.
Indeed, the hat is small.
I'm hearing you. He was a cartoon character. That hat in live action, as depicted in the cartoon, would not look good. The hat was right. Cad Bane, this translation into live action was so incredibly successful. He is so creepy. It's 100% Cad Bane, which is really hard to do. I mean, you all are going to do a whole separate Ahsoka episode. It's not always easy to translate people to live action, even if you think they might be. Cad Bane is so tough. They did it so well. And I see this criticism all over the internet. Like, it's not just you all. But I just think it's just so ungenerous and deranged to say that his hat was too small. His hat is perfect.
Here's the thing, that his hat was too small, though. Like, that's
just
the
thing. It's not too small. He looks great. The hat is right.
The thing is, though, and I hear what you're saying, but the thing is that the hat was too small.
Personally, I think they should have made it even bigger than the Clone Wars one, just like outrageously large, but he can pull it off. Like, he's got this poise and it just works for him and you don't question it.
See, this is where I said the word ungenerous and I'm going to say it again. Like, I just feel that this is a microcosm and that everybody is not giving this show a fair shake if you're gonna try to make the argument that his hat was too small when this just could not have been done better.
It could have been done better if the hat was bigger.
Lily, it's been great having you on the show for your second and final Hoth Takes appearance. You've given us a lot to think about. It's just too bad we won't be able to hear from you ever again because the hat was too small. No, seriously, Lily, this has been really fun. I think this is one of my favorite things to do on Hoth Takes is to take a controversial take and pull it apart and explore it. So thank you for presenting that controversial take. Your reputation has been forever ruined, but we appreciate you doing that with us here on Hoth Takes.
Well, it's been nice knowing you. Goodbye.
It was truly so fun to talk to you about all of this. Even though I disagree with you on almost every single count, especially the hat, you made some really great, interesting points. And I enjoyed thinking about Book of Boba Fett through your eyes. That metaphor doesn't work well, but seeing it through your perspective, that's what I mean.
Seeing it through your hat. All right, that's going to do it for this episode. Again, we want to thank Lily Hay Newman so much for joining us on the show. You can follow her on social media. She's on Twitter at Lily H. Newman. You can also find her by searching for her name on Blue Sky and Mastodon. Thank you so much, folks, for listening to this episode. If you want to share your thoughts or suggest topics for future shows, you can email us at hothtakes@gmail.com. You can also find us on Twitter. We are hothtakes. I'm Eric Yeller on Twitter. Grace is Grace_Seegers, and Haley is Birdnator. Speaking of Haley, she made our incredible logo and banner art. I edited this episode of the show, and I also put together our music. And as always, for legal purposes, we want to note that all Star Wars music and sound effects are the intellectual property of Lucasfilm. You can find a complete archive of past Hoth Takes episodes on our website. That's hothtakes.wordpress.com. And if you like the show, please share it with a friend. You can find us on all the major podcasting platforms. That includes Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, and Spotify. We'll see you next time. May the Force be with you.